Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Hardworking and dependable. Test drive a Silverado at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today. Chevy, drive Chicago.
It will be 30 years this Christmas that six-year-old JonBenet Ramsey was killed in her family home in Boulder, Colorado. She was reported missing. Her body was ultimately found in the basement of the house. Her skull had been fractured, and a garrote was tied around her neck. The case has been up and down all over the place, accusing different people. And just a few weeks ago, a Colorado Bureau of Investigations analyst pled guilty to four felonies regarding the manipulation and deletion of DNA testing data, including that which is attendant to this tragic case. With us to discuss this is one of the best people to discuss it, one of the foremost experts, Charles Bosworth. He co-authored the New York Times bestseller, Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey? He wrote it along with renowned forensic pathologist, Dr. Cyril Wecht. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much, Charlie, for joining us.
My pleasure, Karen.
You are a seasoned newspaper reporter. You were an investigative journalist. You had 20 years at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The book is very good. I binge read it, and I realized as I was binge reading it that I had read it before many years ago, and maybe it was a different version. But it really is a very good book that gives you the both sides and all sides. It shouldn't be both sides. It's like all sides of this case. Now, let's get right to it. I got the distinct impression from reading the book that you really do suspect that the father, John Ramsey, was somehow responsible for this crime or knew more than he said he knew. Is that true? Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair as our first conclusion, and the conclusion that we supported in the book primarily. I have moved away from suspicion of John Ramsey, primarily because everything he has done in the years succeeding the crime fits perfectly with the actions of an innocent person. He did not go away and hide. Usually when a criminal thinks he's gotten away with a crime, they hide out. They don't draw attention to themselves. John Ramsey, and to a lesser degree Patsy, when she was still alive, did the opposite. They wrote books. They wrote, they made personal appearances. They continued their criticisms of the police and the prosecutors. I just think that over the years, of course, Patsy died early. She died in, 2006, I believe, when she was about 46. John is now 82. He has done everything that I think an innocent person would do. That contradicts everything that, a lot of what, Dr. Wecht and I concluded, originally based on the evidence. We still concluded, and the last time we talked about it, and of course, Dr. Weck died last year, but when we talked about it most recently, we both felt that there was still insufficient evidence to support the intruder theory, so we believed that it had to be an inside job of some sort.
Let's like unpack a little bit of that. And I think a lot of people, and again, you know, not people who are studying this as you did, an investigative journalist, and certainly not anyone like Dr. Wecht, who is a person who's looking at evidence in a whole different professional way, that the Ramseys really acted strangely. You know, they lawyered up right away. They had a PR firm right away. He was very, unemotional. He was very, she had some odd mannerisms. I mean, some of those things, can you really tell if someone's guilty by the way they react to a tragedy of this magnitude? And how much of what your suspicions were had to do with that versus the idea that there was not good evidence of the outside intruder?
Well, their conduct from the get-go made us suspicious. the material that you and I talked about earlier is lawyering up would seem to be counterintuitive to what the parents of a missing and then murdered child would do. You would want to do everything you could to help the police solve the case. You'd want you'd be out there encouraging everybody who knew anything to come forward. And the Ramseys did not do much of that. They withheld their interviews with the police, other than brief interviews that first day in their home. It was weeks and weeks before they actually sat down with the police. A lot of that was based on their legal advice. John has explained repeatedly that someone he knew said, "Look, I'm familiar with these kind of cases. You and Patsy are going to be the first suspects. You need to get legal advice to help you with that." That's not as outrageous as it seems. And I think that that some of the advice may have caused them to act in a way that made it all the rest of us on the outside very suspicious.
If in fact the parents were involved, and I'm going to say either one of them or both of them, what would the most likely scenario be in your view? I know we're speculating here. I know that we don't have evidence of some of this, but if there is a scenario, what would that scenario have been?
Well, Karen, Dr. Weck's analysis of the autopsy results and her injuries and the photos that he was able to examine made him conclude that that the foundation of this event was sexual abuse, that she had been sexually abused in the past and that she was being sexually abused at the time of her death. He thought that the garrote was part of the sexual abuse that was part of what he called the sex play, and that it inadvertently shut off the vagus nerve, which runs down both sides of the neck and controls heartbeat and respiration and the very foundation of life, and that whoever was responsible suddenly had a six-year-old girl in their hands who was dead for some reason they didn't understand, and that the blow to the head was an attempt to explain her death. Dr. Weck concluded that blow to the head came either as she died or after she died, because the amount of blood under that, and this was a dramatic blow to the head. This was catastrophic. It was so severe that the skull, the pieces of the skull actually separated and, what they call comitated, which was a piece of the skull moved under the piece of the skull next to it. But the amount of blood under that injury was minuscule compared to what should have been there had the heart been pumping at the time of the blow. So Dr. Weck concluded that the foundation of this was sexual assault, that the death was unintended. That still makes it a homicide, but not a murder in his legal opinion, and he also was a lawyer.
That's right.
So yes, we believe that everything that preceded started with sexual assault.
So we have just a minute before we have to take a break. So this is not, we're not going to be able to do justice, but the idea that a father is sexually abusing a daughter, usually you see it a pattern, right? And John Ramsey was previously married and had children, including at least one daughter from another marriage. And was by all accounts a good dad, and by all accounts a good dad to JonBenet and his son. I mean, does a pedophile just doesn't start doing that one night? Again, you're saying that Dr. Wecht did note from the autopsy that she looked like she had been sexually abused in the past, so maybe it was going on. But when does a father just start to become a pedophile at his age? And it just, I guess it doesn't make sense. We've got 1 minute. Can you comment on that? And then we can wrap, you can take it on the other side of the commercial.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. We found absolutely no evidence that John had ever been involved with sexual abuse elsewhere with his other children, and we found no real evidence to support that he had sexually abused JonBenet. And that's what made made the whole thing such a confounding mystery, based on Dr. Weck's analysis of the injuries being stemming from sexual abuse. So we were left with the question of who possibly could have done it. And we didn't believe it was Burke. It makes no sense to attribute that to Patsy, although we think she was involved at least in the cover-up. Dr. Weck said that his conclusion, you know, John was left as the only other suspect. There was no evidence to support that. It was strictly a process of elimination. I think he quoted Sherlock Holmes as saying, when you have eliminated all of the possibilities, then the only thing left is your first conclusion.
No matter how improbable, I think that was an addition on that one, right? Charles Bosworth is with us. He is the author of an excellent book on this topic called Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey? Let's take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about Burke as a possible suspect. I've got some listeners who want to have that question answered. We're here with Charles Bosworth. He is the author of the book, Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey? It's a great book. I highly recommend it. It's available on Amazon. Thank you again for coming on and talking about this case. It'll be a 30-year anniversary in Christmas time. Let's, Charlie, let's go right to the ransom note, because that was the 911 call. Tell us about the ransom note and what we can glean from it.
I think the ransom note is one of the most suspicious items in the case, and it's one of those that just forced me to conclude that this was an inside job. It's 2.5 pages on legal pad paper, on paper that was found in the home, written with a pen that was found in the home. So if the intention here was a kidnapping, the kidnapper was so slow that he didn't bring paper and pencil with him to the kidnapping. He had to find it in the house. The content and style is the antithesis of everything that a ransom note would ever be. It's 2.5 pages instead of a couple of very short sentences. It goes on and on at length, and as you noted there are misspellings. There are correct spellings of words like attaché case, but there are misspellings of words like business and possession. So it's very odd. There are phrases in it like, John, use your good Southern common sense. No kidnapper uses a phrase like that. The ransom itself was $118,000. Which is an extremely odd amount. It's usually $1 million or $5 million or some number like that, as opposed to the exact amount that was John's bonus from his company, his year-end bonus that year. And there's one phrase that stands out, and that's the phrase "and hence." It is used in the note. And then the next year, that was used in Patsy Ramsey's Christmas message to her friends. Who says "and hence"? It's a very odd phrase. And then we found out that it was something that Patsy used commonly. I don't know that anyone else ever uncovered this, but as you know, in the book, I spoke with a friend of Patsy's who was a professional photographer. She was not a handwriting analyst, but she enlarged notes that she had received from Patsy, handwritten notes, and compared them with the writing in the ransom note, and found a number of very strong similarities. The handwriting analyst who reviewed this for the authorities eliminated everybody that he checked except for Patsy. He could not conclude that she did write it or did not write it. So he could not take her out or put her in. But the note itself is just is just one of the bizarre elements of this case overall, and it just Dr. Wecht and I just could not find a way to say that that was done by an intruder.
Charlie,
it just makes no sense at all.
We're talking about the JonBenet Ramsey case. Charlie Bosworth wrote the book along with Dr. Cyril Wecht, Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey? So the what I don't understand is it seems like it's two different things. We have sex abuse. We have a girl who's been sexually abused in the past. We have a girl who during the course of this crime was sexually abused according to the medical evidence. And then we have this as a kidnapping. Those two things have nothing to do with each other. You're either in there to get the money from dad or you are a pedophile and you are torturing a girl and it goes awry. So the whole thing makes no sense. And, you know, and no wonder, you know, we have the suspicion with the family. Now, one of the things that you talk about in the book is a little bit that there was no idea that this was an outsider. There was a broken window in the basement, but I think it was too small for anyone to get into, but there was tampering with a door. And I don't know if it was a kitchen door or another door, but you couldn't really tell if it was done at the time or some other time. Why would an outside intruder theory not work in this case?
Well, you know, I've stood and looked down into that window well where the pane was broken, and I'm 6 foot, 200 pounds, and I know I would have a heck of a time getting into that window well. It was covered with a grate, and getting through the window, even if I could reach in and open it from the inside. That would be very difficult. There was a suitcase found under the window that the intruder theory has always supported as being the way the person got up into the window when he was leaving. But that could have been put there at any time. There's no other evidence of an intruder that we could find. You mentioned the garrote around JonBenet's neck, the handle that was slipped into the rope to use to twist the rope to tighten it as a garrote came from Patsy's art kit, her painting kit. It was the handle of a broken paintbrush. All of these things generate the assumption that it was the killer or the kidnapper did not bring a kit with him to accomplish any of these goals.
Charlie, you mentioned. Go ahead.
Yes.
You mentioned.
I was just going to say it continues to be one of the many confounding elements of the case.
You mentioned Burke, and I've got a bunch of texters who are asking me, why not Burke? Can you give me the bullet points as to why? I believe he was 9 years old at the time.
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Yes.
So tell us why Burke, you think, is not a viable suspect.
Number one, a 9-year-old did not write the ransom note. No 9-year-old has the intellect to write the ransom note, which is written in block printing. The expert said it was written by a right-handed person using their left hand to try to disguise their writing. So the ransom note certainly excludes Burke as
unless,
a possibility.
Unless he killed her and the parents were covering for him.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's unlikely that that a 9-year-old is going to commit the kind of sexual abuse that was involved. Not that that hasn't happened or couldn't happen, but then you've got the blow to the head, which again is an incredibly violent act for a 9-year-old who exhibits no other behavior to lead us to believe he's capable of that, and as you said, he's had no previous or subsequent problems of any kind, and he was eliminated as a suspect. I think he was the first person officially eliminated by the authorities during the early part of the investigation, and there are various reports that his voice appeared at the end of the 911 call, asking his parents, what did you find? However, his parents have reported that he slept through all of that initial conduct in the house, and was only awakened after the police arrived. So there's just not enough evidence. And I know there was an investigation, I believe, that was part of a CBS program that concluded that he may have struck JonBenet on the head with a mag light that was found on the kitchen counter. And again, that would certainly be a possibility to inflict that kind of injury, but there doesn't seem to be any causation behind something like that.
How bad was the crime scene compromised?
It was as bad as you just described, Karen. The police did not seal it off as a crime scene. Their explanation was that it was a kidnapping. That was their approach from the beginning, was that it was a kidnapping. So they did not actually consider it to be a crime scene, which is absurd. So there were, as you mentioned, good friends who the Ramseys called, who came over to support them. Their pastor was there. I think there were some family there. So you've got all of these people walking all over what amounted to the crime scene. And John Ramsey just described his discovery of the body. He pulled the tape off of her mouth. He moved the blanket that she was covered with. He picked up the body. He took it upstairs, placed it in front of the Christmas tree. Patsy Ramsey held her daughter's body, which would be a reaction that we could all understand. But all of the possible evidence that could have been gleaned from that as a crime scene was destroyed. There were fabric from her sweater, from Patsy's sweater, found on the body. But at what point was it placed there? Was it placed there when she picked up the body, or was it there from earlier during the commission of the crime? So there were all of those kind of questions. And it was one of the things that the Boulder police did in the very first hours of that case that compromised it perpetually. There were things that they did not do that they should have done, things that they did that they should not have done. So it was a disaster of a crime scene, and it was no more of a crime scene than it would as if it were at a shopping mall or something.
You know, one of the things that I remember thinking was really a mess up by the police was that when this was reported, they did a search of the home. Now, granted, this was a huge home. This was a mansion. Literally a mansion, but they didn't find her. And, you know, it was until hours later where I guess the police said to Ramsey, you know, go check it out again. So he was the one who went down into the basement. In your book, you have somebody recounting that Ramsey goes into the basement. The basement must be pretty large. Maybe it's the full footprint of the house. And he goes right to this little room that was going to be a wine cellar, apparently, and finds her immediately. Is that what you think happened, and is that suspect, or suspicious at least, that he kind of went right to the room where she was?
That was the account provided by Fleet White, who was one of John Ramsey's best friends and was there with his wife that day to support them. And when the police asked John Ramsey to search the house and see if he could find anything out of order or anything missing or something where it shouldn't have been, Fleet White went with him. And Fleet White told the police that John Ramsey went down into the basement, which was described as a labyrinth of hallways and small rooms. And he went right to this one room, and the door to this room did not open very easily. And there was a report that the police had pushed the door earlier, and when it didn't open, they didn't force it open, assuming that if it didn't open, that there was nothing there. That he forced the door open and found that there was a bare bulb on a string, on a wire, turned on by a string that he turned on, and there was the body. That is certainly suspicious. I mean, I assume John Ramsey's explanation would be that he thought that was one place that had not been searched yet. But to go directly there and find the body is certainly suspicious, and that was one of the things that caused the police so much angst right from the beginning.
I've heard John Ramsey on podcasts and recent television interviews where he's just begging for this DNA to be retested. To your knowledge, I'm sure you have followed this case. You wrote the book many years ago, right around when it happened, but I'm sure you have followed it, and I think you've had some other editions come out. But what, to your knowledge, is still out there as far as DNA, and what do you think, given the technology advances that we've had, genetic genealogy and all of that stuff, what do you think should be done or could be done to find the perpetrator?
The DNA testing has advanced dramatically since 1996 and then the years after when the investigation was so active. There is a technique now just referred to as touch DNA, which DNA can be found simply left by a touch by a hand or some person, you know, brushing against it with their arm or something. It's much more sensitive than it ever had been in the past. John has said that there was evidence that he thought would contain touch DNA. And that the authorities, he said, were in the process of testing that he had been assured by the police that all of those items would be tested again. There was an unidentified DNA sample found in the waistband of the tights that JonBenet was wearing. Again, using the touch DNA technique, they did find DNA. It was they identified it as DNA, but it was too degraded and too small of a sample to lead to identification and matching and that process. But that's one of the ways, one of the items that John said could be tested. And he said he's been assured by the police that all of the items that possibly could contain touch DNA are being retested. Now, I haven't heard anything for months in terms of results of that, and I haven't seen John quoted recently about anything else. He has said that he thinks that this kind of testing could make an 80-90% chance of solving the case. That's assuming that they can identify DNA and match it to a suspect.
Just quickly, John Douglas, one of the most famous criminal profilers, did a profile and said it was a man, someone who knew John, may have been envious of his success. Apparently, the company for which he worked had sales of over $1 billion that year, and it was announced so that people knew that there was a lot of money involved and that he was going to be getting this bonus, and that he may have entered the house with an intent not to murder her, but he knew about the house. He knew how the place was arranged, and he knew the family's routines, that he was young, impulsive, and disorganized. I mean, as we all know, murderers aren't always brilliant, and they aren't always all well planned out. What do you think of his profile, given all you know about this case?
First, I have to say that I have met John Douglas. I've interviewed him. He was involved in investigation into the murder in the second book I wrote, Silent Witness. Of all of the people I've discussed, I've met and interviewed, Douglas is one of the few that I consider a genius. And I would never deem to contradict his conclusion or his psychological profile. I think, however, that if the suspect is the person described as you just described him, that he would have been one of the very first people to be interviewed by the police. If he knows the house, he knows John, if he's been there enough to be familiar with the house, that's the kind of thing that puts anyone under immediate suspicion as a potential suspect. So I find it hard to believe that person described by John Douglas has not been interviewed and has not been examined completely as a suspect already. But as I say, John Douglas is a genius, and I had the privilege of talking to him for one day, and he's somebody I could have talked to for a week. The guy is fascinating.
Yeah, I agree with you. So let's wrap this up. The book, I'm going to mention it one more time, Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey by Charles Bosworth. What is your thought, if you're a betting person, are we going to ever get to the bottom of who killed JonBenet Ramsey?
I don't think so. I hate to say that there's a crime that'll never be solved. Of course, we have Jack the Ripper. What Cyril and I always said, absent a confession, I don't know how this case will be solved. The evidence is so thin. And unless the new technique we just discussed can be more valuable than I know it to be, I don't see how it's going to produce a solution. So absent a confession, I just don't see how we can solve this.
And that's a sad one. That's a real sad one, because it seems like a crime that we should be able to solve, you know, given all of the resources that have been attended to it. But I hope you're wrong, but you may be right. So thank you so much for joining us. Can you just tell our listeners quickly about your book and where they can read it?
Yes, the second edition was published by Gray Malkin, and it's available on Amazon, and it's one of their leading true crime features on Amazon, and it contains an updated, we wrote the first book a year after the crime, and this contains updated chapters and more information of things that happened, including the information that there were indictments that the grand jury wanted to return against the Ramseys for concealment of a homicidal death, that kind of thing, which we didn't know until years later.